I've got an idea. Let's just spend. Because this is the news, according to me. What a fine, happy Monday morning. This is March 8th at 9:17 Central Time. Be 10:17 for most of the country that in my life. But at least I have some hot chocolate this morning. I'm in a hotel. I'm in a hotel in Appleton, Wisconsin, of all places, where it's still wintertime. Actually, it's supposed to be 40-some degrees here today, all at once. Normally, they have negative temperature here, so I guess they're trying to make up for that today. Yes, I'm on a trip. So this is going to be another 30-minute show. I cut my shows, when I'm traveling, I cut my shows back a little bit. Just because I'm limited on my time that I can afford. So, yes, these are trying times. So over the, since our last show, I do not believe that the big fat check stimulus bill had passed yet when I was last Friday's show. I don't believe it had passed. One of the reasons I had recorded the show a little bit early, and so it wasn't yet out there yet. So yes, we have decided to spend the $1.9 trillion, but now that we've passed the bill, we can see what's in it. We can see what's in it, Nancy. Let's see what's in it now. It's becoming very obvious that this bill is atrocious, and there's another bill that they're trying to get us to. I'm having issues here with my computer. This is what you do when you broadcast when you record live. We're recording live. There's things in this bill that are coming out that are even more atrocious than I thought. I knew there was a lot of spending that wasn't part of the bill for had anything to do with COVID. They are literally just throwing money at this. Let's just and this has been said before. Back when the there was a $700 billion bill, I think, back in the day. I think this was back in 2008. And they had decided that they needed a stimulus check to correct the problem with the 2008 crash. Now, keep in mind, the crash happened right before the election. This supposed crash, another crisis that was put into place under a Republican administration that swept in the Democrat administration. And then the recovery was the slowest and lowest and worst in U.S. history under Obama, whom we were told by, he told us that we were going to be unable to restore the economy because we needed a magic wand of some kind in order to do that. And then when the economy continued to grow and boomed under Trump, really just kind of opened up and blossomed like crazy, Mr. Obama decided to say that it was because of him. He basically said, "You're welcome." He actually literally said, "You're welcome," to a group of people upon speaking about the economy. Again, this is the, you know, it we're supposed to forget about what was said in the past, and because that was, you know, that was yesterday. So, and basically, they play on this idea. They know that the American people's memory, at least the people who are working every day or going about their daily lives, listening to pop radio, not paying attention to the news, excuse me, and they know that they just hear these little 30-second sound bites at the top of the hour, maybe on the station that they're listening to, And the music and the entertainment that they have, they choose, feeds them with all kinds of, what's the term? I know a perfect word comes to mind, and you can fill in the blank on that. But basically, baloney. Let's just say baloney. And the interesting part of that is that they use that. They use the knowledge of the American people's dumbing down, I will call it. Those who aren't paying attention, which is about, I'm just going to make up a statistic. I bet it's more than half, and I probably more than 3/4 of people probably don't really pay that much attention, it seems. At least in the adult range of people. I guess I'm calling that 18 and above. Because when you start to include those kids, all they're getting is they're being fed. The college age, by far, a large majority of them are being educated by an academia that is radical left. Which brings up one of the issues of this whole thing is that the part of the foundation of this whole thing and the philosophy that's coming out of this, and this is what, you know, I always have to back up and say, where is this idea coming from? Where is the philosophical ideological foundation of this motivation coming from? And it's a really serious question, and I'm not sure I've got the answer on this, other than to say, first of all, the Democrat Party is not the party it was. There has been a takeover in a very radical sense of extreme left, and we're going to call it extreme left, but it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's left in terms of Democrat Party. This is a completely different party. It has a very different philosophy, very different foundation. And it has crept in over time, but it has worked its way into the Democrats, into the Democrat Party. It's found a place there. Now, I'm not going to give the Republicans a pass here because the establishment Republicans have gone along with it. There was a time when Democrats and Republicans could compromise. They could come together on something and agree to how something was going to be worked out, the rules that would be used for spending and for implementation of policy. Because there was a common thread among the two of an understanding of individual liberties and the Constitutional Bill of Rights. And we were working towards equal rights for all, not special rights for some, or dividing people up into identities. That philosophy, that idea, is not found in the Constitution. In fact, that goes directly opposed to what the Constitution even stands for on its foundation. And this idea of special rights is very dangerous, because now you are threatening the rights of some minorities, and that minority being me. I'll just say it. There's only one of me. I'm a minority. I don't have multiples of me. There might be a lot of people that look similar to me. They have the same skin color. They might have the same gender. They may have the same demographic. They might be the same age. But there's only one of me. And because of that, the full weight of the Constitution, of the Bill of Rights, is there for me. My one person, individual. And if there is all of a sudden a protected group, well, now they have rights beyond what I have. That group has rights that I don't have. That flies in the face of everything in the foundation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Everything it was founded on. And that's what we have now. And this is where, I want to kind of get into this whole idea, because the basic ideology and the philosophy behind this new the trend, the over the it's actually a kind of a blooming or a blossoming, revealing, evolving thing that's happening here is kind of at the core of what's going on with the current administration and the current, everything that has to do with the bills that are being passed and what's happening in terms of Congress and whatever's happening with the Oval Office. I'm not sure exactly there. Be interesting to hear the conversations that are going on and who's calling the shots there. I think the people behind calling the shots are also the ones leading the agenda in this radical new party. Back in the JFK days, when you had a person who understood, the JFK was probably the last Democrat who was at least that administration was not as, and we still had the Cold War going on. We still had, all those things happening. We had a Democrat party that understood individual liberty and rights. There was a lot of corruption there, but that's politics. The interesting thing about the Clinton administration, Clinton played a good part. He played the role well. But in my opinion, I remember it wasn't long after Bill got hired, after he won the 92 election, that Hillary, who was not elected to anything, most first ladies take up a cause, and it's usually something to do with human rights or something to feed the children, whatever it is, education, or in Michelle's case, it was children's lunches, which turned out to be a total sham. The case that for Hillary was she went after, she wanted to have government health care. She was the first one who introduced that to Congress. And she was all over it. And she was just, and she all of a sudden, she had this, 20,000 pages or whatever it was, some ridiculous, it was a ridiculous amount of pages. All of a sudden, she just came up with this bill for government health care. And they weren't calling it single payer at that time. It wasn't going to be single payer. It was going to be basically like a Medicare for all type thing. It wasn't quite that either, but it was government health care. And unfortunately, nobody ever called out this question of where did this come from? Who wrote this? She didn't sit down in her basement and write this thing overnight. Who's behind writing this stuff? When you come up with a 20,000 page bill, when the reason Nancy comes out and says, well, we have to pass the bill to see what's in it, is because she hasn't read it. She doesn't know what's in it. She can't tell you what's in it. They have to pass the bill, and then all this stuff kind of comes out because there's all these things behind it, because there's a controlling group behind this whole thing, and it is typically lobbyists of some sort that are from somewhere, probably a union or some organization that's behind the whole thing, that they're pressing her or them to pass. And they just pass it because they're getting the payola. That's keeping their job. That's how it works. Speaking of payola, the stimulus, we're going to talk about the stimulus bill a little bit. Some of the things that are in it, as well as some of the statements that were made about all that. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the some of the border issues, but not a lot there. That's an ongoing crisis that they're not calling a crisis. They're just because they choose to define it differently. It's not a crisis. It's a challenge. They're calling the detainment centers, now they're calling them welcome centers, reception centers, or whatever they're calling them. We're also going to talk a little bit about the timing of the bill, the spending bill, and some of the things that are in it and some of the things that have been said. And we're not going to talk today, this morning at least, about H.R. 1. I may not have a chance to have a show this evening. If I do, it's going to be late. But I've got a limited amount of time in my evening time tonight. So I may not get a show in tonight or tomorrow morning. Or I might just get a show in late tonight and not one tomorrow morning. However, here's the thing. The stimulus bill, $1.9 trillion, is just this money being, it's just this large amount. And I was getting back to this other bill after the 2008 crash, if you want to call it that, the crisis for the bankers, the people who have all the money. They were in a crisis. They needed this, so it was $700 billion or $900 billion or whatever it was. When asked about it, the one guy who was making these decisions, who was in on the committee meetings within the White House, they said, well, we didn't know exactly how much we needed when they were coming up with an amount. All we knew was we needed a large amount, so we just threw out this number. They literally used the word threw out this number. They're just throwing money at the situation. No accounting for it, nothing, you know, no idea of about how much or no, there were, no, we're not even, I don't care about getting into the pennies of it, but let's get into at least the millions of dollars. Let's narrow it down. What we need, looks like we're going to need $569 million. No, it was just, well, we need a billion. Oh, let's make it $900 billion. Because we know we're going to need a lot. Now, see, there's a plan and a purpose for these kinds of things. And this is where things start to escalate. And when you start to see this kind of money flowing and you start to realize how it's being divided up, you'll start to understand how this feeds the giant or feeds the swamp and feeds and keeps it going. Because this is what's happening. And this is why we've seen an increase in so much of this stuff over the last 20 years. These funds that go out that are earmarked, so to speak, are going to little organizations here and there, little projects here and there. Some of those projects have already been shut down. Rand Paul did a good job, I think, about 4 or 5 days ago, interviewing someone for a position in the administration, Biden administration. And he was going through all these past things that were earmarked. All these projects, and he just touched on it. He didn't even scratch the surface of what's been done, but he just listed about five or ten things, and he went into this whole speech about how, you know, there's like 50,000 going here, we got $1 million and $2 million going there for bagel research. There's another thing for mosquito mating. Whatever it is, but it's got all these things that are going into research as well as also other businesses and quote shovel ready projects, which we've learned about. And that money gets spread around, all of these little projects, all this stuff goes out there, and all that stuff had nothing to do with the bill itself. It was just money going out. Now what happens with that is those are specifically purposefully chosen. Those aren't, somebody didn't fill out a piece of paperwork and try to decide on, I need to apply for this amount of money under these rules. I have to comply with such and such, and I got to be able to do this to in order to say, so show why this money is needed and needs to be spent, and by why it needs to be spent by the tax dollar or taxpayer. No, they don't do that. This is money being paid out as payola because the individuals approving it know that it's coming back to their coffers. And I'm not talking about their personal coffers. I'm talking about their campaign funds. Now, it will eventually get back to them. They will live high on the hog forever because all that money is around them, and they're the reason the money is around them, and those people will protect them with their lives. So that's what happens. Family members, whoever it is part of their campaign, or like Ilhan Omar's husband, who has a campaign business, and a lot of her money is being funneled to her husband's business through her campaign. Well, gee, isn't that convenient? So he can make $1 million a year, and oh, guess what? She gets to share in that because she's married to him. I think she's married to him. I don't know. She was married to her brother at one point. Then she got divorced from her other husband. She got remarried to her other husband and then divorced him and then was just with this other guy. And that's a whole soap opera thing there. But I digress. So we have this stimulus bill, and all this money is going out. Now here's the weird part about this. And you have to understand why they're doing it this way. They have about 9% of that. So about 200 billion dollars, not quite 200 billion, is actually going to COVID relief items, the $1,400 stimulus checks, which, by the way, 17 million fewer people are going to be getting stimulus checks under the Biden administration plan. 17 million fewer people are going to be in the $1,400 checks. That's a significant amount. Now, I don't know how they've narrowed that down, other than maybe they looked on the voter records, decided they weren't going to give it to Trump supporters. I know that they have limited the amount of money you made, I think, based on 2019 again, because nobody's filed 2020 taxes. I mean, at this point, very few have. So how do you know how badly someone was hurt in 2020 by the COVID thing? Because they haven't filed their income yet. But they're basing all this on 2019 income. Now, you could have done very well in 2019 and hurt very badly in 2020, and you won't even get a stimulus check, which I think is outrageous. If you're going to pass them out, make it fair. I don't necessarily like the idea of passing them out at all. I don't think we should have shut the place down. However, since government told them to shut it down, then government's going to have to be the one that helps them out. But I do not agree that it should just be this based on some arbitrary rules that they come up with. This is how, when government gets involved in this kind of stuff, they have no idea what they're doing. They think that they're experts on everything. And they don't bother listening to anybody. Their only motivation is to get reelected. That's how their money flows, based on how can I get reelected? How can I keep this power that I'm so drunk with? So they continue to do that. And that's how they decide how the money gets directed. Now, I'm talking about the establishment folks that are there, and this leftist radical agenda folks that are there. So we have this, we have what we call the Democrats, and we call them the radical left, if you want to call them that. But really, it is just it's a different party. And it's a Marxist party. You might say Leninist, even. You have to understand that it is very different. So, for instance, in the stimulus bill, there are things being passed that are have nothing to do with COVID relief at all. There's money being awarded. Kevin McCarthy got on the floor the other day, Kevin McCarthy is not exactly an individual. He's got a good first name. I'm not sure about his last name, but he's got a good first name. And he was on the floor the other day, and he made the comment. His opening statement was this: ladies and gentlemen, or whatever he said, the swamp is back. And of course, there was an uproar. People were all outraged. I'm sure they were Democrats or all upset. And then he called for order, and they got the place settled down, whatever it was that was throwing a little tizzy fit. And then they did it. He said it again, and he said it louder, which good for him. The problem is, Kevin McCarthy has one foot in the swamp and one foot on the edge of the swamp. He is a very slippery creature. And I don't really trust him that far. He talks real nice, And at this point, he was making, he made a good speech. He read a good speech. Not so sure I'm convinced that he is 100% genuine in his holding to conservative values with regard to government. So he brought up the point that the stimulus funds, this is a very telling part of this. Part of the issue is that the stimulus funds are being spread out over several years. Some of the spending won't happen until 2028. Now, if you look closely at the timing of some of the release of some of these funds, this guarantees certain organizations, certain people in the political spectrum, or behind the political spectrum, are getting funding at specific times. Why? I wonder why you would want to have certain funds dispensed at certain times and guaranteed those funds. Because if you give those organizations those funds now, things could, what happens if those organizations go away? Well, that money is still going to be paid out, even if the organization goes away by 2028 or whatever. But here's how it works. You look at the election cycles, and these funds are distributed during those election cycles, specifically at certain times. So the payola, or the circling back, the backflow skim off of that comes back to pay off the coffers of the campaign funds for those individuals running for office, is very specific. As long as that money is flowing, they can continue to keep themselves in the stream of that money. And that's what it's all about. So this has nothing to do with working with people and trying to give people aid and help them with this whole COVID thing. This is very different. Now, you've also got funding that goes to a large degree of funding that goes to state and local governments. Now, here's the problem with that. It's just certain states and certain local governments. And interestingly enough, a lot of these state and local governments didn't made it through without any problem. A lot of the government expenses, actually, believe it or not, some of the state and local government budgets actually were less under this whole thing. There wasn't as much spending. Now, there's a variety of reasons for that. One of it is that when there's a lot of people doing things and active, and there's a lot of things going on, there's more expense for the state and local government. When people are shut up in their homes, there's not as much going on. There's less. It sounds like, oh, state needs help because the state. When was the last time you got a check from your state? When was the last time your city sent you a check? When was the last time they stopped collecting taxes, for instance, from you because of, so their budget stays the same. Their funding does not change. A lot of their employees were sent home on unemployment. And yet they still continue to get their revenue. So, I don't know about you, but my property taxes didn't go down. My income taxes didn't go down. State sales tax is still the same. So how do you figure that their state governments are having a problem? Here's the issue. These states were hurting before COVID. This is a bailout for them to continue their ride to the race to the bottom, to continue to fund them on their way out, to keep them from going into bankruptcy. And their policies won't change, so it's just going to be another issue later on. But they have to keep propping up the facade in order to make it look like they're doing something right. So this ideology behind this whole thing I'm still, it still troubles me that I can't put a finger on. When there's a black hole, whatever you want to call it, the absence of something means there's something there. That's how they determine where black holes are. When they can look into an area and not see something, they know there's a black hole there. Out in outer space. And that's kind of what I think we're seeing here, is there's some kind of a, because why would you continue? You wouldn't manage your home this way. You wouldn't just continue to, you know, but we're approaching $30 trillion in debt now as a country. We're roughly spending, I believe it's about every 2 minutes, we're borrowing $1 million. Every 2 minutes. And that's not slowing down. You have to ask the question, where are we going? Not where are we, but where are we going with this stuff? For instance, Mark Dice this morning had a really good report, and I pulled all this information from him. But basically, boys and girls toys in California, it is illegal now. I think they've either passed a bill or that's going to pass. Boys and girls toys in a store cannot be labeled boys or girls. You can't have a boys or girls section anymore in the toy department or in the clothing department. Can't label them as such. Who decides this? Who comes up with this stuff? This is coming straight from academia, and academia is steeped in Marxism and this idea, it's a phony idealistic utopia, a whole different view of worldview. It has nothing to do with Judeo-Christian ideas at all. Nothing. It's a completely faux, made-up morality that somehow, and it's going to continue to head that direction. How much further do you think it's going to go? At some point, you will not be able to dress your children gender-specific. They will not allow you to. It'll be considered child abuse to dress your child in what looks like boy clothes, or and who determines that? But it's you know, if you don't allow your, you know, if you don't put everybody in a dress, then you're that's child abuse. Because obviously the state can take care of your children better than you can. That's where we're headed. It's definitely where we're headed. And who decides those things? Where is this philosophy coming from? And that's kind of the question you have to ask. It's not about fighting back against the little issue. It's the bigger issue behind it is, who came up with this idea? Where does this ideology come from? Because it is absolutely crazy. There was a poet that spoke at the, I think it was the inauguration, and it was very woke thing that she said. And I guess somebody from another country who was more woke just laid into her and destroyed her lack of wokeness, I guess. So now you got woke against woke, which is, you know, they're basically eating their own. And that's what's going to end up happening at this point. It's the vilification of people who they disagree with. That's the problem. It's a very, very different kind of mentality. It's, well, we wanted to work with you, but you didn't go along with us. And this is what Schumer said basically over on the House floor when he was confronted about the bipartisanship of this last bill, because it was down party lines. And the question was, well, under the Trump administration, we passed legislation that was bipartisan, had you know, votes from both parties. And his report was, well, as soon as the Democrats won, then of course now the Republicans are backing out and they're not going to do anything. No, you guys rammed it down their throats. You wouldn't take any of their amendments. You wouldn't accept any of their. I think they took 3 amendments out of the 57. I think that they proposed, and a lot of them were ridiculous. Like this, just totally ridiculous stuff. So, yeah. So hopefully, I'll have a chance to get a show done this evening. Talk a little bit more about this, and I'm going to continue to look into H.R. 1. There's a whole lot of things in H.R. 1, the For the People Act, that we need to talk about, because it's a serious bill, and I'm concerned about it. So, in the meantime, have a great week. We'll continue to pray for our nation here. We've got these two major bills, and like I said, they're gonna try to overwhelm the system with all kinds of crazy, wacky legislation in the next couple months. And you have to keep your eye on the ball here, because it's a serious thing. My bumper music's coming in, and it's going to drown me here in a minute. God bless everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk later. Have a good day.